You are listening to the Talk Podcast. Let's talk about it. This is Matteo, and thank you for joining us. At the Talk Podcast, we talk about what's happening in the port, maritime, and logistics sector. What are the latest trends? What's happened in the industry lately? Where is the industry going? So let's talk about it. Remember that you can follow this podcast wherever you like to listen. You can also subscribe to receive it directly to your inbox at www.talkworldwide.com, where you can also find more information about other talk events. Now let's get started. In this episode, we will be looking at what's happened lately in the industry, what have we done in 2024, and what we can expect for 2025. So let's talk about it. And to do so, I am here with Paul Galli, Managing Director of PSL Advisors. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Matteo. I'm doing very well, thank you. And thanks for this opportunity to discuss the events of last year. Look forward to this year and fill in the gaps between the various talk events.
Paul, you have been the only non-talk person that has been present and participated at all the events last year. By the way, great moderator skills. So I just wanted to ask you, you know, as an overview of the industry, what were your main takeaways? What did you like the most?
At the end of the day, there's a common theme throughout all these regions. You know, one of the questions I get asked most, having lived in many locations and worked in a lot of different countries and regions, is what are the differences? But I always answer that with, actually, there's more similarities between the regions of the world than there are differences. And this really comes to the forefront when you see events in Asia or Americas or Europe, as talk have done over many, many years, and last year was no exception. I think the common theme of the energy within the industry, I've been privileged to stand up there on the stage with some very eminent speakers who are leading the growth of the industry and looking at things in a far more sustainable way. So that's really the main takeaway from my side.
Yeah, I think sustainable is a really key word here, because a lot of people always think that sustainability only refers to the energy transition. But I think sustainable, refers to an action, a type of operation that keeps going throughout time. And I think one of the actions that has been going throughout time the longest is trade, which is the main reason why we get together.
That's what it's all about. You know, if there's no trade, then there's no talk. There's no terminals, or there's no terminal industry. As we all know, shipping carries over 90% of world trade, and there are many facts and figures about that. Container shipping is a subset of that, and vitally important between trading nations and the various trade lanes. So I think the fact that we all get together a few times a year in the TOC events allow sharing of best practices, moving the industry ahead. And as you say, sustainability is also linked with, it's not going to work if companies fail. We need to have good economics as well, in order to balance the investment and also the profitability of the business.
That is a great answer. And you've mentioned something really interesting right there, which is about the flows of trade going. Part of our theme from last year, which was reshape trade lanes. You know, there has been some conflicts recently. It's been somewhat volatile out there, whether it was the Red Sea crisis or the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. The industry has looked for alternative trade lanes, you know, going around Africa, the Middle Corridor. And in that regard, one thing that I wonder is, how feasible is this in the long term? Because, for example, and I remember talking about this with you about a year ago, the Middle Corridor sounds great in theory, but does it have the necessary infrastructure to support the volumes of cargo that go between East and West?
So I think it's a great example of the resilience the industry has found. And even before some of these conflicts flared up, that middle corridor, and in fact, the overland routes from Asia to Europe, were already becoming a key component in the logistics chain. They're in a fantastic point in which they are cheaper than air cargo because of the volume that you can move by rail. but they are actually, at the same time, they're faster than the sea route from Asia to Europe. So whilst the total capacity available on the rail route, especially through the middle corridor, is not the same as the total shipping route, the traditional shipping route, then at the same time, it is a very important corridor and an alternative. So you have actually seen the number of trains which are leaving China is still on the increase. And although, you know, some of those routes you have to cross, like the Caspian Sea, but you do eventually end up in places like Poti in Georgia, which is a great exit then into Europe and onward carriage. So I think the middle corridor and other overland routes still important for the trade route.
Completely agree with you. I mean, maybe we can say that it has some room for growth, but it's definitely good in terms of the resilience and keeping cargo flows going. I like how that sort of leads to a reshape of trade lanes, which was actually part of our main theme last year, whether it's going around Africa through the middle corridor. There is definitely, I would say, an adaptability in the industry. And you have mentioned China. It is a country that has been mentioned a lot lately. It is, as we know, the factory of the world. But one thing that we have also been hearing about China lately is the China Plus One strategy, which is very relevant for the shipper sector. You know, whether it's caused by tariffs on goods and port equipment coming from China or because of potential disruption on supply chains, the industry has been talking a lot about this country. You know, do we produce in China? Do we move out of China? Do we diversify our supply chain, et cetera, et cetera? And less of the outcome, I think that's easier said than done. Change an entire supply chain does require time, resources, investments. So I think my question here is, this whole China plus one conversation, is it just that a conversation, or can we actually look at a supply network with multiple production hubs in, I don't know, the next couple of years?
I don't think it's a question of when it will happen, because it's already happened. And I think nearshoring and onshoring and China plus one strategies are already in place by most of the world's significant manufacturers in different industries, even whether it the automobile trade and other manufacturing and FMCG. You know, some countries have done very well and picked up on this quite quickly, such as Vietnam is definitely a highlight. But you've got countries such as other ones in Asia, such as Indonesia, and other places which are also coming on board with this. The thing is, Matteo, you've got to have a plan B, right? You can't just have one logistics chain, because we've seen so many influences can disrupt that. So you need, you know, one or even two different strategies, whether it's manufacturing in closer to your market, whether it's moving manufacturing to Mexico for the Americas rather than making cars in Asia, or even manufacturing in Europe. So yeah, China plus one or China plus two is going to certainly be a theme of this year and in the future.
And with that, the other thing that came to my mind, you just mentioned another country that has been in everyone's mouths lately, which is America, you know, the US. In terms of nearshoring, we have also been hearing a lot about that lately. You know, Mexico, just like Vietnam, Mexico has been one of the sort of like most popular countries in that regard. My question here is the tariffs. We have seen that the new administration in the US has been somewhat fan of tariffs. So what happens with nearshoring when the country that is right next to you where you are starts receiving tariffs? How do you think that can impact the supply chain?
You know, without getting deep into politics on this particular call, I think that's partly a negotiating strategy, perhaps, of the US or the present administration. I mean, you can see their tit-for-tat type tariffs, which then that country or those countries will put back on the US and other places. And that'll probably happen for some time with certain products. But at the same time, I think the main trade lanes will continue. There will be some rise in costs. I think we have to look as well, and not just at manufactured products, but we have to look at the raw materials. So, you know, whether you're making cars or washing machines or whatever it is you're producing, you need iron ore, and you need various types of metals like manganese and nickel and things, which are all transported by bulk. So these are the key components into manufacturing a lot of this stuff. And in order to manufacture, you need to have the refining and smelting capacity in order to produce the specialized steels, or you're going to smelt bauxite into aluminium to make cars and aeroplanes and things like this. takes a lot of power, a lot of energy. So it's not easy to just pick up and move some of these things to a new location. So I think the traditional manufacturing, despite the tariffs, will still be very much China-centric.
The costs of trespassing an entire supply chain or a significant part of a supply chain to another country, you know, the cost would be significantly higher than whatever tariff could come in the future then.
Regions in the world with important reserves of raw materials are, well, you know, Latin America, Africa, certain countries in Asia. Do you think that these regions, for example, if the prices of raw materials goes up, do you think they could play a bigger role in global supply chains?
Well, I think the countries which are producing those vital minerals, whether it's, you know, copper in Chile or other types of minerals which are coming out of Africa, they've really got a good handle on the situation in terms of the supply chain. They need to improve their infrastructure. But at the end of the day, this is what the world needs to make those manufactured goods. So it's not just the fact that, you know, a lot of these goods are coming from China or China plus one. It's the fact that in order to make them, those minerals have to end up in China to make the steel and the aluminium, which are the main components of a lot of these things. So you're going to see, especially Latin America and Africa, are going to become more empowered, and they're going to become more, let's say, careful about their negotiations with those minerals.
I think it's going to depend a lot on how big your reserves are in to determine what role you play in the sector. And you've mentioned also infrastructure, which is really important in terms of facilitating the trade of those minerals and manufactured goods, etc. In a lot of these places, for example, infrastructure is developed through concessions. You know, looking at 2025, again, without becoming too political, how do you think the landscape for this year can affect concessions in this region? Do you think that concessions might not be renewed, or there is room for potential new investment, especially for these regions? If I am in a developing region, let's say, that is looking to attract investment, what should I try to sell? You know, what image would I want to showcase?
That's quite clear for me, as having been on the investment side for the last few years as well. The ease of doing business, the judicial security as well, the security of your concession agreements. You really need to not only portray that image, but you need to, ideally, you've got a track record because you've already been doing it. Also, I think a lot of countries who are maybe starting out on this journey, they should take advice. There's good advice out there from the World Bank and IFC and everybody for running tender processes for concessions. So don't try and do it all on your own. I think also then that the concessions which are in place, they need to be honoured, absolutely. I don't think it's a question of just because there are some certain geopolitical tensions for a few years between certain pairs or certain groups of countries, then that shouldn't affect the concessions of those particular terminals or infrastructure units. Because at the same time, those terminals are international. Everything we do is particularly international. It doesn't matter if the terminal is controlled by a certain country, because at the same time, the amount of trade that's going through that is going to so many different countries.
That is a really good point that you're making, Paul. And actually, it takes me back to what you just said at the beginning about sustainability and about sustainable, because trade, for trade to be sustainable, it needs to look at the long term, and it needs to look beyond any potential ongoing disagreement between countries A and B that may be finished in the next 3 to 4 years. In the end, we work in an international industry, as I have mentioned, and we need to look at the bigger picture and look at the long term for this to be sustainable.
Well, just look at the ports around the world. Before even the container terminal industry was invented, you know, ports have been around for thousands of years. They're still in existence. Most of the world's major ports have been in existence for the last 200-300 years, from when, you know, the ships were wind-powered and then became coal-powered and things like this. During that time, we've had so many different conflicts and so many, you know, the balance of power has shifted between groups of countries and things like that. But the ports themselves are carrying on. They may be controlled by different people in different countries over time, but I think the actual inherent geography of our business is not changing.
Exactly. Geography is not changing, but the industry and the way we work in this industry is changing, the technology is changing. And we have seen quite a bit of reluctance to implement certain types of technology lately. For example, in the US last year, there were a lot of port strikes concerning the implementation of automation. What do you think about that?
Automation is here. Automation is, as we know, is already implemented in many terminals around the world, and it's increasing. So I think it has to be looked at in terms of the way labor interacts with shipping and the port industry, and retraining in those areas is very key. I've seen it myself when implementing new terminals in Central America, which were very manual intensive in previously. So you need to set up, you know, things like training schools to retrain those workers in the local manufacturing industry that will come as a natural progression of the terminals themselves becoming more efficient.
I think automation has great potential, and we have seen in several regions the reskilling of workers to work with automation instead of working against it. Unfortunately, that has not necessarily been the case in the US lately. There were lots of port strikes. An agreement seems to have been reached at the moment, but we're yet to see how far that goes. I think even Donald Trump, the new president, said that he was against automation. So yeah, I think we are yet to see how that unveils in the future. And now, speaking about Trump, we all heard his comments regarding the Panama Canal, his request to take it back for the US under the allegations that it was controlled by China, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think beyond the anecdote, and considering that we'll be going back to Panama this year for Talk Americas, there is going to be a lot to talk about that. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think in relation to Trump's comments about Panama, this is quite unfortunate, because at the end of the day, an agreement was made, the Carta-Torrijos Treaty. The Panama Canal, whilst it was constructed by the United States, was handed to Panama, and there's an agreement that covers that. The statement that Trump comes out with, that it's controlled by China, seems a bit nonsensical to me, and certainly nonsensical to the Panamanian government and people. I think he's probably referring to the fact that of the five container terminals around the Panama Canal, two of them are concessioned to Hutchison Ports, a Hong Kong-based company, but they're not the only two. And in fact, they don't have anything to do with the operation of the canal. They're container terminals. In fact, the other one on the Pacific side, PSA, is controlled by a Singaporean company. And the other two terminals on the Atlantic side, the largest one is actually a US company, SSA, in Manzanillo Terminal. And the other terminal is actually Taiwan, which of course is not China. So I think on that terms, the Panamanian people and the Panamanian government are holding fast. They've done remarkable things in Panama. They had challenges last year with the drought, but they found a solution for that. They're going to enlarge the lakes so that they're not so susceptible to drought in coming years, and they can keep trade flowing through that remarkable piece of engineering, which is the Panama Canal.
So, Paul, you have given us a lot to think about. And before we wrap up, do you have any personal thoughts or any key message that you would like to give the industry for this 2025?
Yeah, some of the issues that we've spoken about, which occurred last year, obviously they've dragged into 2025, and some of them, unfortunately, are not going away soon. So the industry needs to continue to build in resilience for the trade routes and for the different shipping patterns, be that ocean or even overland routes, to provide alternatives for their customers. So I think the other key area is the ongoing reduction in emissions. We have seen that some of the green energy projects are probably taking longer to implement than we would all like. We all want to have a green planet and do things as environmentally clean as we can. But the cost and the time for implementation to produce some of these new green fuels, that's the biggest challenge. It's great to see that there are some industry leaders out there who have already started in a big way, and they've made some significant investments in their ships to burn clean fuels, and that trend will increase, albeit perhaps not as quickly as we would like. And I think on the same sort of vein in electrification, that's going to be once again a big subject this year. of electrifying, getting rid of diesel, local diesel emissions in the terminal. Ideally, of course, that power that's providing power for the terminal is also produced in a clean or as a clean as possible way.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Energy transition is a key topic that we are going to keep following. And again, I think that wraps it up in terms of the message. We're going back to the sustainable growth of the industry. Sustainable trade, sustainable energy, a way to continue moving forward sustainably. Paul, thank you so much for your thoughts. You've given me certainly a lot to think about. I do hope that we can see you joining us at our events this year.
Yeah, no, likewise, Matteo. It's always a pleasure to work with you and the top team. I look forward to attend the various events this year and to provide my moderation skills up there on the stage and introduce another great round of eminent speakers.
Obviously, you are always welcome. And if you want to know more about what's happening this year at the industry, join us at our Lives events. Whether you are in the Americas, Europe, Africa, or Asia, talk with we around the corner to bring together leading experts from the port, maritime, and logistics sectors to address the latest trends. Go to www.talkworldwide.com to find out when our next event is, or visit the links in this episode's description. This was Matteo, and see you at the next episode of the Talk Podcast, and let's talk about it.